Triumph!
Roundtable Live, Monday through Friday, 1 a.m. till 4 a.m. Eastern Time. Bring your mind, bring your ideas, bring your voice. King Arthur had nothing on us. Here, Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com.
Travels to Earth through the rainbow crystal bubbles from the furthest reaches of space and time, across the dimensions to the elements, and in harmony with the colors of the universe. Through her mastery of abstract stream of consciousness malapropisms, she weaves a web of comic, satiric, cosmic conversation. Her subjects can range from Norman, the goose next door, to astrology and earth changes, and into the deep recesses of the soul matrix. She holds a wealth of knowledge on herbs, plants, and astrology. Join Mona and her guests on Adventures of a Feral Hippie as she touches the earthly radio waves 5 days a week at 2 p.m. Monday to Friday on Studio B at Revolution Radio.
I want to thank everybody for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the one place where information never sleeps. Revolution, Revolution Radio!
All right, let's show them what we got here.
Hey, everybody. All my viewers and people that think I'm worth watching, I appreciate you very much. Thank you
for those things.
You're telling the universe you understand that that's your karma, and it will stop happening to you.
Welcome, everyone, to the Jonathan Wright Show with your host, Jonathan Wright.
Common sense to me says that we completely abandon the vaccination project.
Let's work together.
Let's stop these evil Nazis. When you fully receive the gifts of each moment and the beauty in all that surrounds you, life gives you more of these. Make the most of every moment. Being present and mindful reminds us of the fleeting nature of life and pulls us to feeling gratitude for every blessing we are given. Mindfulness teaches us to accept ourselves and all our emotions, to feel them, to let our thoughts pass through the mind objectively, all while being consciously aware. To live in a state of enlightened mindfulness is to just be.
Welcome, everybody, to the Jonathan Wright Show. It is Saturday evening, and we are here, and I would like to thank everybody for joining me. I had a guest planned for this evening, and I am not sure if he's going to be here, so we might have to do a course correction midstream, and that's okay. But I would like to briefly go over some things that I was thinking about and had on my mind for the day. And before I do that even, I would like to go over how Revolution Radio is a listener-supported radio station. This radio station brings us the ability to have freedom of speech. It allows people such as myself and many other awesome show bearers and content creators to come on here and express their ideas and share their knowledge. And I honestly share their art. It's an art to get on here and talk about whether it's gardening or the news or whether it's just interesting, crazy shit like sometimes I like to talk about. It is an art, and there is an art to it. And I by no means think I have this pegged down or figured out, but we are working on it. So the fact that this is a listener-supported radio station brings us to the idea that, well, one should donate, and where would and how could one donate if one was so inclined? And that is a fantastic question. What one would do is go to revolution.radio, go up to the top there, and you will see a donations button. Click that donations button, and then you will see other boxes and buttons that will allow you to donate through Patreon. Which is really a good way to go. You just do a monthly subscription, and you just don't think about it. DonorBox, which is kind of like PayPal. Direct payments through the credit union, the station's credit union, which is called AutoBooks. And then there's crypto. Bitcoin, Bitcoin Cash, and Ethereum are what is accepted. And of course, there's always snail mail. So, that having been said, please do donate and please keep places like this functioning and funded so that we can all share in the freedom of speech that this does allow. So, that having been said, I would like to kind of start with talking a little bit about what I did for the day, which was get out in the yard, and I did about 5 hours of good yard work, good gardening. And it was kind of unexpected because my neighbor had walked by when I was out messing with my yard, and she needed some help, which was really good because I do like to still continue to help others as best I can. I'm kind of house ridden at this point, taking care of my mom, but when I can get out and still do for others, I try to. And so she had hurt her back, and she was getting older, and so she needed some of her hostas split, which are big. They're just big water drinking plants, and they look pretty. They don't really have any kind of medicinal or edible value, and I don't even really think they have flowers. They're just big, kind of nice looking vegetation. So and she needed them halved. So you basically go in with a big shovel and just literally cut the thing in half. It's huge. You know, they're the size of like a beanbag almost, and smaller, of course, but they'll get that big. So I went over and cut a bunch of those in half today and then brought those back to my yard and put those in, and along with big balls of monkey grass, probably basketball-sized bundles of just big green tall grass, and it shoots out these thistles, these purple little thistle-looking things. So it's pretty cool. I'm getting my yard kind of straightened out, and it's functioning as well because it prevents that part of my yard is where I get a lot of runoff and a lot of drainage, so like it just washes out and naturally slopes down that way. So I think this will actually help maintain some of the soil in my yard and prevent quite so much of the erosion. And and thinking in that regard, like. I was just kind of contemplating like the idea of where our world is and what's going on in the state of things and how absolutely like overrun we seem to be by evil at this point on multiple levels, you know, the Hawaii thing, and that's just kind of the most recent that I'm actually going to have a guest on hopefully next week to talk about that. And she is collecting a lot of information, and I've already looked through a bunch of the stuff in her Instagram, and she has a lot of crazy information, and so I would like to bring her on to discuss that. And but where I'm kind of going with that is the idea that we have to choose, you know, we have to choose whether we're going to fight or whether we're going to give in. And you know, humanity's always got that duality, that battle, that, you know, that choice to make. And I think even in spite of how bad and rough things look, we have to choose to battle through and fight through. And even if it seems like there's just no hope, which a lot of times when looking at some of this stuff and realizing how much they've sprayed on us and how much they are spraying on us out of the, you know, jetliners and different planes, all the different types of things they can spray on us. And you just realize at a point we're way far out of the potential for really being in control of our environment. We can, to some small degree, you know, you can not be around certain people. You can not be in the middle of a city. But even if you're outside on the outskirts, you know, like that's really not a way to be like, well, I'm just going to run away. And even if you have done that and that is your plan, that's awesome until everything completely breaks down and then there's just roving hordes. So, I mean, you know, I guess where I'm going is just to say that we need to keep that spirit, that energy, and that idea that even if we're walking into certain death, like there's still a point of continuing on going. And that's what I'm doing with my yard is even though it seems like there's quite a bit of the odds are stacked against us, and I still enjoy being in my yard, and I do all my yard work barefoot, and I get grounded, and that really does help with so much anxiety and stress, and it's just unbelievable. So one thing I cannot recommend enough, is for people to be in your yard and be out in nature with your shoes and socks off, like seriously. And the more you walk around that way, the tougher your feet will get. You know, at first, yes, it's hard and it hurts. And if you just do that and literally just in your own yard, if you just walk around in your own yard all the time barefoot, you will build up the toughness in your feet and you'll be able to walk, you know, anywhere all the time. And it truly is amazing how much it grounds you. And even though it's called grounding, and yes, that's what's going on, there's an actual exchange of electrons happening between the earth and your body. You are building up a positive charge within you, especially if you're wearing rubber-soled shoes. And that positive charge is causing all sorts of, well, first of all, those are free radicals. That's the definition of what free radical is. And so it causes all sorts of different behavioral and immune and psychosomatic reactions in you. It really affects your person and your being quite significantly, the charge. So when you're barefoot and you're on the ground and you're out in the sun and, you know, you've got as much of your skin exposed to the sun as you can, like all these things in conjunction, and smelling the fresh air and hearing the birds and being around, getting your hands and feet into the dirt and the soil, it really has an effect on you. It really does. It has a massive effect. So I'm going to check real quick and see if my guest has popped in and said, hey, I'm here. But no, he has not. So this will be a guest that we will bring in at a later date and have him back because something may have gone on. I know he was visiting his family, and that happens. It has happened to us a few times, and it is not going to be the last, I'm sure. So no big deal. What I would like to do, though, is play a Jordan Maxwell video about the United States being a corporation. And this is just a good, it's just, you know, Jordan Maxwell crushing it for a little while. So I really just am going to say, enjoy this. And I will be back right before the station break. But I'm going to be sitting here listening with you because this is going to be a fantastic listen. Okay. All right, so again, this is Jordan Maxwell. Let's see if that's the right one. Here we go.
Idea, we're talking about artificial intelligence, and I said that I thought that was a wonderful idea to have artificial intelligence because so many people don't seem to have any intelligence. At least we can say we got a computer that can think for itself because most people can't. And so I think, well, that's wonderful. At least we can make a machine that can think for itself. God made one and we can't figure anything out. So the whole idea of artificial intelligence is just pregnant with possibilities because it's not necessarily good. When you say artificial intelligence, that means somebody is programming you to think what they want you to think. And so, my God, artificial intelligence, well, there's another avenue for Nazism, communism, Marxist-Leninist Soviet communism. That was a process by which government will tell you what to think and how to think, and it's a whole artificial intelligence that has nothing to do with truth and justice and decency and honor and human freedom. It's an artificial intelligence. So while on the one hand the idea of artificial intelligence sounds very interesting and very new age, fascinating, what's the word I'm looking for, popular subject. But on the other hand, it also reeks of Nazism, fascism, totalitarian thinking, so that everybody must be in compliance with the new intelligence. So that's why I think it would be interesting to follow on what we were talking about the last time. We just brought up the subject of artificial intelligence, but I'm sure that Jeffrey has found some other good stuff to talk about in relation to that. So what have you got, Jeffrey?
It's a pleasure to be back on the show again, Jordan. And wow, I'm you're always showering me with kind words, and so I'm really grateful. I think just in response to the intro that you mentioned, is that, you know, the reason why I'm able to find certain factoids that that, you know, I'm happy that you found it interesting, and I hope our listeners tonight will have the same benefit as well. Is if it wasn't for your work, I wouldn't be here. If it wasn't for you, if it wasn't for your, you know, 5-decade-plus sacrifice, I wouldn't be on the show tonight. You know, it's because of your work that I went down this path. So I have to extend, you know, incredible kudos to you. But to get to our tonight's topic, I'm delighted that you're sort of wanting to sort of continue with this, because, you know, on a personal level, I think we could do, you know, 5 or 6 shows on this, and we could probably come up with original material on all 4 or 5 shows.
Oh, yeah, no doubt about that.
Be writing stuff, you know, those who want to search and those who want to sort of expand their own research, there shouldn't be any shortage of material. So the first thing that I want to sort of touch on is, you know, today you're talking about the government and communism and Nazism, and they tell you what they want you to think. Well, there's a Latin term, and some of you guys may be aware of this, but for those who are not, it's parens patriae. And I know you've mentioned this, Jordan, and it it means parent of the nation. It's Latin.
Hold on. I just mentioned that in the hour just now, in the hour just before you.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I just mentioned that. I couldn't remember the exact term. I knew it was parent something. So explain that again, what it means and what it is.
Absolutely. So it's a Latin term. It's parens patriae. And it's a P-A-R-E-N-S for the first word and P-A-T-R-I-A-E for the second one. And basically what it means is the parents of the nation or parents of the fatherland. And it's basically a law that refers to public policy. Again, I'm not a constitutional lawyer. I'm not an expert in anything. And I would say not all of it, but the bulk of what I'm going to be mentioning you can find on the internet, and then go find your own bottom line sources and expand your knowledge. But the Constitution, from what I understand, has basically been replaced with public policy. And since the nation is the fatherland, and, you know, the government is your parent, that's why you know, why on forms that your parents are legal guardians. You know, they don't say, you know, some of them will say mother and father, but, you know, in legal terms, if you end up in court, you know, the legal guardian is a term that's not dismissed; it's actually brought to the forefront. So it's like a three-parent contract. You know, there's the father, which is the government, and they give you all the papers. They're the ones that give you your identity. They're the ones that give you the permission to get a driver's license when you're of age. They're the ones that give you permission to go to school, public school, you know, and then go make a vote public, you know, voting for, you know, for office or running for office, all these things. It's all permissions. And so license, just all the stuff you mentioned in the past about license to get married and go get a fishing license and, you know, you want to get a motorcycle permit and all that stuff. It's basically dad's letting you know that it's all right if you pass the test and you pay up. And, you know, you can see.
Yeah, but legally, they're called a parent.
That's right. And so, you know, this is basically one of the things, and I used to be really worried about this, but I'm not anymore, because it's new. It was new for me. It may be new for you. For those listening, but the idea of the government being your parent, it's old. And because it's old, there's nothing really to worry about. It's just an option to remind yourself that when you are part of a corporation, which is an artificial intelligence, it's your invisible dad, is, you know, U.S. citizenship or Canadian or wherever you're from. You are a participant on two levels, in the real world with your real mother and father, and you're participating as a citizen. And So because it's invisible and you can't shake hands with the United States, you can meet its representatives, they need to create an environment so that you feel like you're part of something that's not just a piece of paper. Because most people, if I were to say I have a country, it's called White Rabbit Country, nobody's going to take me seriously. But if I have, you know, lawyers and I have judges and I have prisons and I have schools and I have money, I got lots of money, I got a printing press, well, all of a sudden people are going to be interested because then I can offer jobs, I can offer security, stability. So they need to provide an environment where it's serious. And that's where patriotism comes in. And patriotism is a psychological mindset that's, you know, it's delivered into the minds of all of its citizens, whether you accept it to a little bit or a lot, that's up to you and your family environment. You know, I've been to 4th of July parties and they're fantastic. I think it's incredible that America has patriotism, but in reality, it's not really something it's more like a fun thing for most people. And also there's a component where people want to defend their country, which I respect. Because if you have a great place to live and you can raise your family, why not want to defend that? Who wouldn't? So I have respect for people who want to protect that. But the reality comes down, it's all artificial. And this is where we're going to segue into artificial intelligence, where I really believe that corporations are a major precursor. But at the same time, the giant brain of each corporation is tied into other giant brains, and they just keep tying them together over and over. And one of the things that I found is that it's just for fun. If you go on the internet and you say Life on the Hill, I think if you type that in on the internet or YouTube it, there'll be like little videos of interns from universities saying, I have Life on the Hill. Well, what's that? Well, that's in Capitol Hill. What's Capitol Hill? Well, that's Washington, D.C. And in Washington, D.C., that's where all the business happens. That's where all the magic for America happens, where all the policies are passed and all the money flows in and out and all the decisions are made for the military and so on and so forth. Well, Vatican, the word Vatican, if you look up the etymology, it means a mound or a hill. And to me, this is my opinion, but I personally believe that the Washington, D.C. and Capitol Hill is a financial, corporate, artificial intelligence franchise of the Vatican. It's just a key.
Totally agree with you. Totally, 100%. Totally agree with you. And there's a lot more on that subject on the web that people can go and listen to. Authors, writers, researchers, lecturers on that subject. And I've talked about it before. So if you want to follow what Jeffrey is saying, just go on the web to YouTube and type in on YouTube, type in the word U.S. is a corporation. Very simple. Type in the word U.S. is a corporation. And look at all of the articles and websites talking about the very same thing Jeffrey's talking about, but especially on YouTube, all the lectures and writers and authors and researchers who have looked into this artificial intelligence of the corporation and the company or the corporation called United States Corporation. And you'll find that we here in North America are not living in the United States of America. We're living in a corporation that was incorporated in 1871. So it's a company now. It's not the United States of America, a republic, but it's a privately owned company called the United States Corporation. And in any big corporation, and this is a big one, any big corporation like General Electric and Ford Motor Company and any big corporation, the people who are working for the corporation, no matter what country they are in, no matter how many millions or thousands or tens of thousands of people who are working for that corporation, they can be in any country, but they're still employees. They have incorporation. They have things which allow, they have situations which allow the general population of that corporation to once in a while vote on who they would like to see the next president of their corporation be. And so when people go to the polls to vote for the next president, they're not voting for a new corporation. They're voting for who should run the new administration.
And I'm going to pop in real quick on this and add to what they were just saying. And you can look up yourself 28 USC 3002 and then go down to number 15. And so 28 USC 3002 is the definitions section. And you will see that in 15, it says United States means a federal corporation. So I just thought I'd throw that in there. And then if you look over at 42 USC 9102 and then scroll down to number 18, it explains what a U.S. citizen means. Any individual who is a citizen of the United States by law, birth, or naturalization. And it goes on and on. But and again, you have to realize that so because the United States is a federal corporation, then that makes you an employee when you say that you're a United States citizen. Okay, back to Jordan.
The corporation. Mm-hmm. So the corporation is what it is, and you ain't changing that, period. And so what you're doing when you are going to the polls to elect a president, well, all corporations have a president. So what you're doing is you're just letting the powers that be, the secret powers behind the corporation, the secret money people behind the corporation who founded it, let them know which one of their people that you particularly like. So therefore, when you are, they give you about 5 or 6, 7 different people who could be the president of the corporation. The stockholders will agree to they could be the president of the corporation. Well, who are the stockholders? Well, that you don't know. None of your business who owns the corporation called the United States. But the bottom line is that big corporations, you could say in a matter of legally speaking, they have what is called a corporate democracy. Meaning the corporation, which is all of the people working for the corporation, the company, once in a while, every 4 years or every so often, they have the opportunity to vote on who they would like to see running their corporation. If they like the person that's been in there, fine, then just vote him back in. But if you don't like him and everybody in the corporation is of the same ideas or the overwhelming majority is of the same idea, they're tired of this particular president and he's worthless, so get rid of him and put a different guy in, and maybe we can do something with the corporation. We got a different leadership. And so therefore you are now voting for a next president of the company. You're not voting for a different company. No, no, it's the same company. It's the same people who own it, the same people calling the shots, but you just are given the opportunity to feel like you have some kind of an input as to who the next president will be. But the bottom line is that the president merely represents the board of directors. And those board of directors are always, in every corporation, the guys who put up the money and founded the corporation, the guys who actually incorporated the company. So there's where the real power is. The policy holders are the people who put up the money to found the corporation. They actually make the decisions for the corporation. The president is simply a corporate name and a corporate position in a corporation. So in point of fact, it doesn't matter who the president is. It's the company and the owners of the company, the stockholders. And usually it's only a handful, and they are the predominant stockholders of the corporation. So the question you need to ask yourself, who are the actual stockholder owners of the United States government? There's a good question for you. Who actually are the stockholders of the original corporation incorporated in 1871, who really owns the company that we call the United States Corporation, that has its home office in Washington, D.C. Somebody owns that corporation. And we have a president and a vice president, because in corporate law, you have to have a president and a vice president and a secretary treasurer. So that's what we got. We got a president, the vice president, secretary treasurer. But it's a corporation, and nobody's going to change the corporation. We can merely, if you want to, make it feel better. Every 4 years, you can get a different administration of the corporation. But when you change the administration of the corporation, you haven't touched the corporation. You've just put a new guy in to represent the corporation. So you haven't really done anything until you find out who actually, in fact, owns the shares and the stockholding shares of the corporation. Who are they and where are they? And why is it we've never been told that the United States after 1871 is no longer a republic, the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands? Well, that was good until after the Civil War. After the Civil War, no longer was there a United States of America. Why? Simple. Because the Civil War, close to a million people died fighting each other within the United States. So we were anything but united. We were not a United States. We just came from a war in which we were killing each other. And so after the war was over, we've killed so many of each other. We've killed the North, killed the South's killing the North. We are a lot of things, but united ain't one of them. So, all right, so what are you going to do with all of these people now that the war is finally over? Well, you're going to have to do something, because they're all hungry and they want to work and they want to eat. And you've got millions of blacks from Africa who are here, and they're not going back. And you got all kinds of people coming from all over the world living here, and they're not going back. So what are you going to do with all these people if you don't have a United States of America anymore? We're not united. We're not united at all. Well, the best thing to do is start a corporation, call it a company. And everybody works for the company. And that's the way we operate today. The United States is simply a corporation, a company. Go on the web and type in the word U.S. is a corporation and read it. It's all there. So that's basically what you were saying. I just wanted to clarify, we are no longer the United States of America with freedoms and liberty and justice for all, and rights and, you know, and border, what do you call it, the Bill of Rights. We don't have any rights. You work for General Electric, you don't have any rights. You show up on time to go to work, and you take off when you're given time for lunch, and you stay and work until the hour when you leave. You don't have any rights. You want to get paid, you want to work for the corporation, they call the shots, period. End of sentence.
I'm glad you brought that up, because when you're an employee of a company, and I have a feeling, you know, everybody out there is listening, they have a job, and or they've had a job at some point, and most companies, they have a thing called a code of conduct. I know I did it when I was I worked at one place for 12 years, and they had a code of conduct. And the important part about everything that's being discussed here is that it's a code. And a code is a militarized term. It's basically a language that, you know, you are supposed to learn and people outside aren't supposed to really fully understand. And like the Uniform Commercial Code and the Civil Code and all these other codes that are out there that you know, you would take years to learn the code correctly. That's why they have to go to university and make you learn all this stuff. But going back to what you were saying earlier is that if you're an employee of a corporation, the first things first, they only tell you what you need to know, and that's it. And they tell you just exactly enough to operate. And speaking of corporations, the mindset, and again, this is the point that I didn't mention in our last call, and I want to bring up. I found it so critically important, is that and this has everything to do with artificial intelligence, and I'm going to segue into that, is that the human mind, and this is my opinion, the human mind has the potential to be extremely good and extremely uncaring. And it can do, and the human spirit can do a lot of bad things. And if someone's hurt or abused or taken advantage of, it just makes them feel like, well, other people are doing it, why don't I? And because war and competition and prejudice and bias are unfortunately out there rampant for hundreds and thousands, you know, thousands of years, it's been present all throughout humanity. And there's been a fight to make, try to have an honest living and try to do the right thing. Unfortunately, the other side of the psyche is there. And so when you look at a president of a corporation, I used to ask myself and ask my teachers the question, why do they replace the president every 4 years? Why wouldn't they just, if there's one, you know, if someone makes it the president, that is a child's mindset that I had. Why don't they just keep the guy in it, you know, until he decides to withdraw? He's done his 12 or 15 years of service, or, you know, why can't they just keep a good guy in there and run the show instead of always changing it? Changing someone every 4 years, that complicates things. But then if you look on the other side of the spectrum, well, you know what? Corruption, I'm sure people out there must have known there's some corruption going on. And corruption is the foundation of how to outcompete your competitors, how to outspy your neighbor, how to outwit your enemy, how to execute our world's economy. From my understanding, is called zero sum games. Someone's got to win and someone's got to lose, and that doesn't mean it's going to be fair. And it's a Disney movie. It's going to be, I'm going to use corporate espionage. I'm going to steal corporate data. I'm going to take advantage of my relationships with people and then lie in their face and then deal backhanded deals. And then we're going to give it a fancy, fancy name. We're going to call it lobbying, and nobody will understand. And it's basically a sleight of hand for the mind. And yeah. So they have to have someone replaced every 4 years. And I was also thinking about it. I used to think, well, good, it'll protect. And then there's the other side of the spectrum. We'll protect the American people. If we get a bad apple in there, it's only for 4 years, thank God. Well, the reality is that every 4 years, no real good work can actually be achieved. And for 8 years is possible, but 4 years as a president, when you're running 300 million people, a country cannot be run real time. And this is where it comes into artificial intelligence. When President Trump comes in, or if Hillary had won, doesn't matter which one, they are not actually running the country real time. They are operating off of laws that were established hundreds of years ago, programs that were established decades ago. And guess what the programs are? Let's give us a few examples. The war on drugs, the war on poverty, the war on criminals, and the war and the war and the war. And it's all these programs are on the war on this and the war on that, and the war on illegal immigration, the war, it never ends. So where's the good? Well, it's designed to be dividing. It's designed to capitalize on the misunderstanding of what's going on. And then the media makes mega billions. If I turn on the news and I watch the news for an hour, I will not see Roger the Squirrel being showcased. I will see, unfortunately, children crying, Jeeps blowing up, heartache and endless, because it makes money. And if you're scared and you're confused, that's where they win. And confusion, someone told me this, I couldn't believe it. Someone says a person has the maximum chance of learning and growing if you're in a confused state. And I was like, how's that possible? Because you're questioning, because you're not sure, because usually the next move of a confused person is, I don't understand. That's a question. What does it mean? That's a question. Well, how do I deal with this? That's a question. That means you're thinking. But what they do is they add in a couple special ingredients to make sure you don't get it. It's called fear. It's called control.
Propaganda.
That's right. It's called, let's make sure that you can't ask the questions because you're too scared to ask.
Yeah.
And that's where artificial intelligence is going to be the end of humanity, if people do not educate themselves and do not take ownership of their mind and their intellect, because your mother and your father gave life to you, and you need to honor your parents, you need to honor yourself, and you honor your family.
I couldn't say it better. That's exactly right. That's precisely right. And just keep in mind that propaganda does not deceive you. People say that, you know, you're being deceived by propaganda. No, propaganda was not created to deceive you. It helps you to deceive yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Because when we all think the same, that means nobody's thinking at all. And therefore, propaganda is out there for all the cattle, what the Jews call the Gentiles goy, G-O-Y, or G-O-Y hyphen E-M, goyim, which simply means, they say that it means people of the nations. But goyim actually comes from a term for human cattle. So it's pretty much unfortunate, but that's about the truth, is that we humans act like we're cattle. And we're all out there chewing a cud and looking after the babies and taking care of the children and roaming around trying to find something to eat and doing what we normally do, and that is get on the ramp, and we're going to be hitting the head with a hammer, and then we'll be a hamburger tomorrow. And so that's the way we humans think. We just go along to get along and never question anything. And again, when everybody's thinking the same thing, that means nobody's thinking at all. So this is why it's so important to look at the knowledge and wisdom and understanding that most people are too afraid or don't have time to do. And that's why I have always been promoting the idea of wake up and get a life and start doing some research on where things come from. Look at the etymology of words. My God, what an incredible study that is. When you find out the words that you use, where they come from and what they mean, and how we've been sucked into a whole system of thinking, never questioning or realizing somebody has put this whole world system that you live under, somebody put it together before your grandmother was born.
And really quickly, I want to jump in right there and say, yes, that is entirely the fact. And even though this seems like it might be a little bit out of place, I'm going to interject how, talking about the cattle and how you get hit in the head with a hammer, and then the next thing you know, you're a hamburger. And that is how they treat us, and that is how we treat animals. And, you know, again, I'm not pushing so much for veganism or something, but I believe we really need to take a look at how we treat everything, because we're going along to get along, just like he's talking about. And everybody, we're following the same patterns, and the disease that we have is off the charts, and the type of wars and conflicts and psychology and different problems within our own selves comes from how we treat other living beings on this planet. Now, it goes down to plants too, and it goes to, so basically, the entire earth. And we have to recognize that we are actually consciousness. We are not these bodies. As much as we like to think we're these bodies, we are here to master the desires and the problems that arise within this avatar that we have taken on. And when we give in to the carnal lusts and the carnal desires, then we stay at a lower consciousness. If we raise our consciousness, which is literally raising our vibration, we become more like Christ, and then at a point we become Christ-like. So I just wanted to interject that there, because it's just something that I have noticed and found that within my own life, the more that I avoid just simply eating meat,
not even really going super hardcore with anything else, but just being conscious about, I mean, literally not going with the status quo. And most people think that's crazy. And most people say, I love my meat too much. And most people say, I need it. And they're just going along because there is so many ways around it. So I just wanted to interject that there real quick and to just keep in mind that the idea of all of this and what Jordan Maxwell was talking about and always talked about was the idea that you need to raise your consciousness and do that through understanding of knowledge. So here we go.
Therefore, we are still today, the more we change, the more we stay the same. We're still buying into and submitting our lives, our very spiritual and human life. We're committing it to follow the dictates of tyrants and mentally deranged morons and inbred goofballs and criminals and psychos. And yet we, you know, never thought about it. We just don't question anything. We just go along to get along. Well, that's the same mentality that gave us Nazi Germany. When the whole German nation fell into, I mean, that's a whole extraordinary story too. Germany in the 1930s was one of the highest educated, technologically advanced, spiritually advanced people on the earth was Germany. They gave us the great cathedrals, the great music, the great art, all of their technology and the mechanics of the Germans were always superior. And people all over the world realized that out of Germany has come some of the greatest music, the greatest architecture, the greatest of everything. And yet, with that background that the Germans had, somebody like Adolf Hitler comes along and the whole country collapses and falls in line to follow the dictates of a follower, of a leader, of a great leader. The whole country eventually molds itself to the thinking of one dictator. And so I'm just amazed how that happens, because I've seen it now at 76 years old. I've seen it now in my own country. I used to wonder how it was possible. Now I know how it's possible. I've lived through it. I'm actually at 76 years old. I have sat through and watched in the past 30 to 40 years the American people who once loved to brag about they were free and liberty and justice, and that it was the land of the free and the home of the brave. And today, the American people, the majority of the American people, have quietly and unceremoniously given up their freedom, their liberty, their thinking. They have turned their back on liberty and freedom and justice. In order to fit into society and be in compliance with the fascist government, who will tell you what you can believe and what you can do and what you can think. And the American people go along with it. They can't wait to put on a badge and go to work for the Department of Homeland Security or join the police department so you can get a gun and a billy club, and you can beat the flying hell out of anybody you want now, and you can do whatever you please to do. Why? Because you've got a badge, and that badge is a very special badge of authority coming directly from Hitler in Berlin. So now you're somebody. You never had a job in your life. You were worthless and couldn't get a job. But now you can work for the Department of Homeland Security. Now you can really push people around and make them and throw them in jail. You can make them crawl on their knees, because now you've got a badge and you're carrying a gun. You're still mentally disordered and goofball, but now you've got the imprimatur of government behind you. And so I am frightened to death when I see my American fellow citizens molding themselves to a fascist dictatorship, and they love it. You go to go anywhere, watch the way the police look at people, the way they treat people. go into any airport, any bus station, anywhere where there's a public transportation, and see how the your fellow Americans living in your hometown who have got a job with the government, see how those people are now treating their fellow man. It's incredible how artificial intelligence, meaning that we humans do not have the ability any longer to think for ourselves. All we need to know is what to kiss and when. And you'll get a badge, and you'll get a paycheck, and you can carry a gun, and you can be God now. You can be like Jehovah. You can be the absolute bottom line authority and can push people around, shoot them if you want, beat them up if you want. Why? Because there is no law. There's only, like the judges will tell you, there is no justice. There's just us.
It's an
incredible story of the artificial intelligence and how what it has done to the human family. We can't think for ourselves, so we have to have artificial intelligence.
And the thing I forgot to mention earlier, but I thought was very pertinent, is that the etymology of the word Vatican, it says mound or a hill, but it's also, it says on the online version, it says it's an Etruscan loan word, which is another civilization, the Etruscans, which you've already mentioned in the past, but it's a loan word which means soothsayer, which basically is the person who can foresee the future. And organized religion needs to be able to see the future, or else it can't stay in power. And it needs to be in an environment where it has intelligence, it has gathering intelligence, you know, maybe through confession or maybe through community responses. And everybody's have, I'm willing to bet anybody who's lived in the Western world will secretly on the inside chuckle a little bit when I say these two examples. The first one is you're at work and you meet somebody who just got promoted in your office and you're wondering how in the world did that person get promoted? They're late. They don't have the right approach. They don't have, they have a bad attitude or they're incompetent. Whatever it is that's not right, somehow they got promoted. Well, and the other thing too is, the other example is you're watching TV and it's like a funny home videos and you see a guy on a bicycle on a ramp and you already know what's going to happen. He's going to wipe out. Okay.
Yeah.
And so he's going to wipe out. So, but you haven't actually seen the video, but somewhere in your mind on a deep subconscious level, you know, this guy's going to wipe out. And you're going to either laugh or you're going to feel sad or you're going to cringe and you see the person, you know, break their arm. But the reality is that if you set up an environment where you already know what's roughly going to happen and you already know that that person on the bike doesn't realize that that's not the best move because they're so conditioned.
Yeah.
And the person in the office, they just repeat what they're told and they didn't ask the wrong questions and they showed up and they did the all the right things for the wrong reasons. They get promoted. So the thing is that the mindset has been so diminished. The individual development and thinking has been brought down to the lowest possible common denominator that, you know what? Me too. If I had a multi-billion-dollar environment, I could see the future too. Just like anybody else who had that. So, ultimately, if they're saying that they're soothsayers, I'm not speaking on behalf of the Vatican. I'm just saying if that word is actually an Etruscan loan word for a soothsayer, and they're able to see in the future, and they see all this turmoil and crises everywhere. Yeah, I pretty much could chalk up with computerized and stuff. I could basically see roughly what's coming down the pipe, and it's not good. And the people who want to understand the significance of all these examples that I'm giving is just go on Amazon and buy yourself an Echo device or Alexa device where it's like a speaker where you just talk, you leave it on, it's listening for your voice 24/7 when you're home and you're giving it orders. And then when you're not giving it orders, it's still listening to you. And it's uploading your voice and your tone of voice and your frustrations and your joy and your secrets and everything all the way up into a computer. And it's going to remember that. And it's not going to discern. It's just going to take it all. And so when you're at your job, you're giving your, you're putting your best foot forward. You're showing that, you know, you're a good employee, and you're not revealing all the, your little personal quirks of your personality. You're not, you're trying to look your best so you can move up and keep your job. Well, in the computer world, it's recording everything. It's recording all the part of your personality you don't want to show your new girlfriend or your new boyfriend or your sisters, your brothers, or your new employer. It's getting it all, and it's getting the dark side of our personality, and it's getting our biases, and it's getting our concerns. And about 50 years from now, people are going to say, well, you know, there's wonderful applications for artificial intelligence that healed my grandmother. Yeah, it also had the algorithms to make sure she can't get insurance. But you don't know that, and you'll never know it, because it's trillions and trillions and trillions of examples of real unfettered human behavior that were recorded without your understanding, without you thinking about how you're behaving and how it might impact you, your neighbor, your children, your race, your planet. And this is the major, major force of AI, because AI is a military process. It's a military funded thing. And it's an extension of basically the belief system that was there to help humanity guide itself through a difficult period, which is, you know, religion. And this, again, this is just all my opinion. Some might, people might disagree with it, but I personally think that the human condition is up for dismissal. It's on its final leg. And if people do not understand that your behavior counts and it means something, and it's going to take us into a very bad place.
Oh, my God. I think everybody is beginning to suspect that that's where we already are.
And yes, that is true. And so that is where I'm going to go ahead and pause that talk. There's still about 10 minutes left in that talk. And we're getting close to the top of the hour, so we're going to be heading to a break for a few minutes, and then we will come back and do the second hour. And in that second hour, I'll go ahead and play off this 10 minutes, and then I want to discuss an article that I've gotten from Dr. Sherry Tenpenny. And it talks about fetal bovine serum, and it just basically, the title of it is The Disgusting Cow Stuff in Vaccines. So we'll discuss that in the next hour. Thanks for being here on The Jonathan Wright Show.
If you're not in control, then someone else is. Join me, Ivy West, for Voices on the Wind, Saturday. I discuss government, health, metaphysics, suppressed science, universal mysteries, little-known incredible facts, alternative energies, and even more than you can imagine. Won't you join us on Revolution Radio Saturdays? For Voices on the Wind, with me, Ivy West.
There are lives in the balance, people under fire, children at the cannons. There are...
Because if your head's in the sand, your tail is a target.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the Internet. Please help support this station so this battle can continue forward. Revolution Radio!
The Secret Kindergarten is here for the young children of the world. The best program on the radio for kids. D dealing with the most important topics in the whole universe. Fairy tales, music and movement, numbers, plants, animals, fun, colors, insects. Take care and cast your ears out to catch a story from the world of other young things. Reach out, up, under, and over. Sing a song. Talk about feelings. Just remember the magic word. The magic word is no. Step on into the secret kindergarten. Saturdays, 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on Revolution Radio.
Join me and the Brian Ruse Show on Revolution Radio, Eastern Standard Time, every Tuesday night from 6 to 8. We talk about the four most vital things, in my view, affecting all of humanity. Number one is UFOs and aliens and their agenda for the advancement of humanity. Number two is the Jewish establishment's control over all aspects of human civilization. Number three, the truth about Adolf Hitler, how he was the opposite of what we've been told. Number four is advanced ancient global civilizations. Join me on the Brian Ruse Show, Tuesday nights from 6 to 8 on Studio B on Revolution Radio.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of whose program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Welcome back to the second hour of the Jonathan Wright Show. I hope you guys are having a great Saturday evening, and I hope you're learning some stuff. Jordan Maxwell is a fantastic researcher and teacher, and definitely miss having him around. He was fantastic, but there are some good treasure troves out there that have basically made it a point to put out a whole bunch of his stuff, and so I found a really cool YouTube channel, which has probably 150 different uploads of Jordan Maxwell. So really good place to go. And for situations like this where I was kind of caught, I don't know, super off guard, I kind of always plan for my guests to not show up. I don't necessarily plan on it, but I always have a backup, or I try to. And since I didn't really have – if I have another person sitting here talking with me, it doesn't matter, and we can just go, and that would be fine. And I think for the sake of keeping it more interesting for the listener, I will try to generally, when something I'm thrown really quick, a fast curveball, I will try to have some Jordan Maxwell on tap, and not just him, but other things. And like for example, on the and in fact that might be a good we might do an audible real quick here. On the Crypt Rick and Jonathan show on Thursday, I played us a clip from Brandon Joe Williams having a discussion with this lawyer dude named Yeager, and they're friends, but this guy was basically just refuting all of his he was basically playing devil's advocate. I don't even know if I'd go so far as to say he was refuting it. He was trying to refute it, but he was playing devil's advocate in the arena of cancellation of debt and discharging of debt and what the different statutes, not even statutes, what the actual code in the U.S. code and in the different law is that says what the different lending companies can and can't do, what lending companies are, what banks are, how all that works. And ironically enough, Jordan Maxwell has a lot of really good information on that. And so one of these times I'm going to play that for one of these moments where I'm caught, you know, with no guest, and or maybe I'll just on purpose do that, and I'll sit here and chat with you guys for a few minutes, and then we can get into that. So I would like to go ahead and finish off the last 10 minutes of what we had. So let's go back to that. Oops, I need to. Sorry about this. I need to go ahead and switch over my microphone. And then you guys. Okay. Now the sound is a little different from me, but here we go.
In a very bad place.
Well, the trillions of cameras, I say trillions, probably the millions of cameras all over the place, all the nightclubs, all the adult clubs, all the illegal illicit drugs and prostitution, human trafficking, all the crime, that's all being, if it's not being recorded, eventually it's going to be recorded. And eventually when AI takes over, the light bulbs are going to have software in them. And that software is going to be able to communicate to your Internet of Things television and your Internet of Things speakers and your printer and your toaster. And it's not just going to find out if you like toast four times a day. It's going to be able to know everything about you. So just understand that we are replacing parents portray as legal analog pre-electronic father, you know, which is the government of our country, which is, you know, there's very many good things about a country. If it's well run and it's, you know, it's there's a lot of good, you know, good people are trying to do good things, but we are creating a new mother and a new father, a new parent. And it's called AI, and AI doesn't have legitimate, actual caring. And see, if you're dealing with people who don't care, which humans, some humans don't care, now you're going to meet someone who doesn't care at all, ever. And people are not psychologically ready for that, to say in 30 years from now, my children are going to be dealing with a computer that doesn't care. And it cannot care, and it never will care. It only will want to have itself maintain and sustain. And that's where the boot of, is it 1984? The boot's coming down on the face of the humor, something like that.
Yep.
It's not going to be a boot. It's going to be an algorithm. And you'll never be, and if that algorithm ever makes a mistake because the input was wrong or it made some sort of error judgment, you'll never be able to contest it. Because it's like trying to contest where was the error. You go bankrupt. You'll never win in court. It's an auto lose situation. So the purpose is, yeah. So the purpose of what I'm thinking is that we need to educate ourselves and we need to be examples of doing the right thing, trying to help ourselves and then being the example to others. Because right now, the example right now is take advantage of everybody and leave them for dead, rip them off so that you can make it. Well, that's going to run out. And it's not 5,000 years from now.
Well, you know, when you talk about artificial intelligence, et cetera, it puts me in mind of motion pictures. Hollywood's been telling you this for years. Remember many years ago, back in the 50s, there was a movie called The Day the Earth Stood Still?
Yeah.
And remember the great robotic creature that the guy from the other planet was telling the humans about this robot, and
yeah.
He said it has absolute control over us in our world, and we just do what it's we have designed this computerized monster to guide us on our planet so that it doesn't matter who you are on our planet, the government is the robotic power on our planet. And it doesn't care who you are. It doesn't care what sex you are. It doesn't matter. you are nothing more than a blip on a computer. And the and then of course with 2001 Space Odyssey, if you remember, the astronaut had to crawl inside the computer. How he had to crawl inside the computer and start unplugging the different memory banks in the computer because the computer had taken over and decided it was going to do what it wanted to do, whether the whether the astronaut or the earthly operation wanted or not, if the computer decided it's going to do what it wants to do, and you will conform to what the computer wants. And so that's the way the world is going. So I would say, and we only have a couple of minutes left, but what I would say is the one important point to this program you need to keep in mind is to always instill in your children and instill in other people to protect their own humanity, to protect your humanity from the incursions of high occult sciences and technology to ultimately do away with you and your humanity. And we know that that Silicon Valley has been for years, I've been reading about it, connecting human brain tissue and human tissue, living tissue with computers. And I've been following that for a long time. For years they've been talking about the high science of taking human tissue from a person and somehow or another joining it with the technology of a computer, which ultimately, maybe a couple hundred years from now, ultimately what they're wanting to do is have an entire human race connected directly to a supercomputer. Which will decide who will do what and who will do when. And this way you don't have to worry about different countries doing different things and having wars and revolutions and violence around the world. Ultimately, in a couple of hundred years, these scientists are looking at the possibility of being able to computerize the entire damn planet.
Well, I'm sorry to cut in very quickly. I want to say this because we have so little time left, is that I not only do I agree with that, but I want to add to what you're saying is that there's just by, and this is, I'm being sarcastic and I say it, there's just by magical chance in the 1940s, they have the first electronic computer called ENIAC, and they called it the Great Brain. And then after that, they came out just by magical chance. We're going between 1 and 2 billion. And I guess basically they have the capability of saying, oh, if we're going to get up to 7 or 9 billion, we need to milk this. So we're going to come up, we're going to have to popularize, and we're going to create what we call subculture. And we're going to create trends that are going to help the humans prepare for the chip and for implanting. And so what did they do? They came out, they started off with something simple. They came out with tattooing, and I have nothing against tattooings, nothing against piercings, and nothing against plastic surgery. But those are the three trends that are leading our next generations to implants. And it's just going to become commonplace. And I'll say, well, that's all military-industrial complex. Why? Because all the computers are made in where? Silicon Valley. And what are women and men getting implants with? Silicone breast implants. And they're seeing, well, we need hundreds of thousands of cases to see if the body rejects it, what are all the possible outcomes, so that the AI knows how down the road how to manage implant technology for medical. And the tattooing, tattoos were not as common. Now all my friends have it, it's commonplace. And body piercings, used to be almost unheard of. Now everybody's got it. So these people who run the show, the intelligence community, the government, they understand that they need to prep the minds of these people who are not thinking. And I don't mean by getting a tattoo you're not thinking, but I'm just saying they're giving you what they want you to learn and popularize it. And so that you go into it. And
That was my point, that so many Americans and so many people in different countries will mold themselves.
Right.
They don't have to tell you, you really need to get a tattoo, or you really need to do this or that. No, just get everybody doing it, and then the rest of the herd will all see it like the 100 monkey idea. With the 100 monkey, all of a sudden, all the monkeys are now doing the same thing. They're all getting the tattoos, and they're all voting Republican or Democrat, and they're all wearing the same clothes, and they're all thinking the same thing, and everybody seems to be worried about Paris Hilton and the football game. And so eventually, the whole entire human race will be on its knees to a higher power that will tell us what's important and what's not, and who to listen to and who not to listen to. And at that point, we have lost our civilization, and we have lost our country. We've lost our industrial base. We've lost our money. We've lost our control of our country. We've lost our freedoms. And now the only thing in America left to lose is your mind. And that's why today, this country has gone totally off the wall with murder, violence, drug addiction, alcoholism, drive-by shootings. The entire superstructure of Western civilization is now mimicking our bosses who have put us in this position.
Well, and isn't that just an accurate statement on how things are going right now, and where things are headed? We are indeed moving towards AI that is going to lord over us, and everybody's just going along, status quo, follow the next guy, do what looks cool, see what's trendy. And, you know, they're going to be there, and they really are pushing these 15-minute cities all over the place. There are something like 26 different cities right now in the United States that are looking at doing this. And think about a rundown, boarded up, dilapidated area of your town that's at this point now full of what could best be described as zombies, people walking around on drugs and basically downtrodden, shifting around and have nothing to do but wait for their next fix and go cause crime. And then in comes a corporation and says, hey, we can get rid of those guys. And most people aren't really going to care what happens to them. And so that does happen. They go away. And then they come in and say to all the people living in that basic area, hey, we'll give you money. We'll take care of things. We're going to rebuild this whole area. We're going to turn it into a convenient and safe. That's what they're going to push. Convenient and easy and simple and safe, because everything's going to be on camera. And it'll just be like the company store. You won't need cash. You won't need your card. You just walk in and you'll be just like they said at the end of that presentation Jordan Maxwell gave, that show he did. These people are going to get these things embedded right into themselves. They have no problem with that. They will have no problem getting something embedded in their hand that allows them to walk into the new 7-Eleven that has no clerk in it, and they can just go in and grab what they need and head back out, because everything was viewed. There was multiple camera angles that saw what they were doing. And beyond that, every product has a sensor. And I mean, it's just ridiculous. We're going into an absolute dystopic, sci-fi horror movie, ultimately. And part of that comes from these crazy injections that people keep getting and thinking that any of it's okay. I know everybody's at this point, hopefully everybody listening to this show and the people that you would share this show with would be going, yeah, no, we're done with vaccines. We're not going to do that anymore. And one of my favorite anti-vax people that I follow and keep up with is Dr. Sherry Tenpenny. And she has put out a Substack article that I will share when this show is over. I will share it in the chat. But the title of this is The Disgusting Cow Stuff in Vaccines, What's Coming Through That Needle. And she says, I wrote this upcoming series a while back, but it is still correct today. Discussions regarding the cumulative amount of mercury and aluminum in vaccines have always been around. I have been reviewing the package inserts of every U.S. approved vaccine and adding up the total amount of foreign matter by weight being injected into humans. To do this, I created a spreadsheet to log every ingredient in every vaccine, including the amount of each substance listed as milligrams, micrograms, or even nanograms. Believe me when I say this has been a time-intensive, colossal undertaking. So I want to add that she is a superstar ninja badass when it comes to knowing about vaccines. She's not just simply anti-vaccine. She has taken it upon herself to learn and know and really be the vaccine person. She knows everything about these vaccines based on what I just read to you that she really truly did. She took a time-intensive, colossal undertaking and went through everything. So she says, I started by listing all the vaccines across the top row of the spreadsheet. There are at least 60 vaccines currently approved for the U.S. market. There are more, and there are 250 more on the way. Working with this page, which is a link, and I don't have that, sorry, but I began to list every chemical and every cell type in the first column. In addition to viruses such as polio, measles, or influenza, vaccines contain at least 130 different ingredients, including metals, chemicals, yeast, antibiotics, sucrose, lactose, and casein. Vaccines have foreign proteins, including DNA from humans, albumin and aborted fetal cells, and DNA from animals. Chickens, cows, pigs, guinea pigs, monkeys, and even insects. Most of these ingredients fall into a group called excipients, with subcategories that include adjuvants, which enhance antibody production, stabilizers, which prolong shelf life, and preservatives, which prolong the shelf life of vaccine components. So that just sounds like fun. Like, yeah, let's just inject all that stuff. Okay. Examining the excipient list more closely, I noticed a number of different bovine ingredients within the various vaccines. Cow stuff here. Bovine casein, milk protein, and which actually I take casein protein in my shakes. That's some of the stuff I drink instead of eating meat. So I do get my protein from animal protein, but I don't, well, I certainly don't inject it, but I don't eat flesh either. And I'm telling you, you will be healthier. And they're poisoning the meat anyway. I'm probably going to have to stop taking the protein powder that comes from the milk because they're poisoning all the beef. So that's a totally different aside, and that's a whole nother show. But okay, so back to this. So again, examining the ingredients, the excipient list. So bovine casein, milk protein, bovine extract, bovine casein acids, bovine serum albumin, BSA. Bovine calf serum, bovine formula-fed calf serum, bovine calf serum proteins, and fetal bovine serum, FBS. I found this to be curious. Why 8 different bovine ingredients? What are the differences between each type of ingredient that necessitates a distinct listing? When I investigated this further, I was appalled by what I found. Cow parts used for vaccines. Why are cow parts used for cell cultures and to make vaccines? According to the FDA, simply because cows are very large animals, commonly used for food, and thus much material is available. Wow, really? The FDA and other sources go on to report that parts of the slaughtered cows used to make vaccines include lactose and casein from cow's milk, glycerol from the tallow, fat, gelatin derived from connective tissue, bones, and tendons, and galactose from circulating red blood cells. The milk proteins and gelatins are considered to be stabilizers and are used to prevent viral degradation. Allergies to these ingredients have been reported after vaccination. She has some examples. Bovine calf serum is the liquid portion of a blood that remains after red blood cells, white blood cells, proteins, platelets, and clotting factors are removed. So after you've taken everything out, bovine calf serum of the blood, that's what you have left is the calf serum. Albumin is the most abundant type of protein in bovine serum. So albumin is a protein specifically. Various classifications of bovine serum are used based on the animal's age at the time of collection. This is important because the age of the animal impacts the characteristics of the serum. Industry standards classify the serum according to the following guidelines. Description of age. description by age, sorry. Fetal bovine serum, intrauterine fetus. Newborn calf serum, less than 21 days old. Formula-fed calf serum, less than 22 weeks old. Calf bovine serum, 21 days to 12 months old. Adult bovine serum, 12 months or older. Fetal bovine serum. Fetal bovine serum, FBS, is the most widely used, the most difficult to obtain, and the most expensive cell culture promoter used in drug manufacturing. In my opinion, FBS is also the most disgusting and disturbing type of serum used in vaccines. Serum is a complex mixture of biological constituents, and even after 50 years of laboratory use, the majority of the bovine subunits have not been fully identified. The age, sex, genetics, quality of food consumed by the mother, and the maturity of the extracted cells creates an enormous amount of lot-to-lot inconsistency. In fact, serum and albumin can be easily designed to meet the needs of a customer by feeding baby calves specialized formula diets. Essentially, this means every batch is a completely new experiment. According to a 2014 article on ResearchGate.com, an analysis revealed that FBS contains approximately 1,800 different proteins and more than 4,000 metabolites. The proportions of each vary between different batches and vary by the health of the animal from which it is harvested. FBS has been known to contain adverse factors like endotoxins, mycoplasma, viral contaminants, and even prions that can lead to bovine spongiform encephalopathy, or BSE, which is holes in your brain, by the way. Bovine spongiform encephalopathy is BSE, or holes in your brain. BSE is a progressive neurological disorder of cattle, now commonly called mad cow disease. When the FDA was asked, do all bovine materials have the same risk of transmitting the BSE agent? This was their response. Scientists have found that different bovine tissues contain different amounts of the BSE agent. It is generally believed that the highest amounts of infectivity are found in the brain and spinal cord from animals in the final stages of clinical disease. Some tissues, such as skeletal muscle and milk, have never been shown to have any infectivity. However, the slaughtering and butchering method used to obtain tissues and prepare materials can affect the amount of infectivity that may be present. Also, the production processes used to prepare bovine-derived materials, such as heat sterilization and chemical treatment, may reduce or remove infectivity. Just like the quality of your vegetables selected at the local market is dependent upon the quality of the farmer, the serum used to make vaccines is dependent upon the health of the cow, the meticulousness of the butcher, and the truthfulness of the manufacturer's source of cattle. Cleaning the serum? To remove most of the contaminants, each batch of bovine serum must be extensively tested and subjected to a list of treatments before being packaged for sale. The overall testing process is labor-intensive and can take weeks to months to complete. One step often used to eliminate the contaminants is irradiation of the serum, but the process is not 100% complete, nor is it 100% effective. When the process is complete, the FBS is labeled with different grades from different suppliers and from different countries of origin. The final products containing differing amino acids, sugars, lipids, and hormones. If the endotoxins are not completely removed, they can induce fever and inflammatory responses in those injected with the serum. So, see, we're getting this idea now that they tell us, oh, well, when you get the flu shot, you'll probably get a fever and a flu. But it's not because they're injecting you with a flu virus. Okay, who knows what they're actually injecting you with, what they claim it is, some DNA sequence, for sure. They can call that a virus. But we're reading right here that, you know, if the endotoxins aren't removed from the BSE, the BSA, the bovine serum albumin, when they inject it into you, you're going to get a fever, regardless of whatever else they may have put in there. On top of it, all the other crap that I listed in that list that she gave, you know, back up the page a little ways. So, here we go. Warning. What follows is the horrifying description of how bovine fetal blood is harvested. Again, this is another reason I don't like to eat meat, folks. You know, you think, oh, that's whatever, and oh, what if I hunt, or what if I kill my meat myself, or what if I know the farmer and he butchers it and he's humane about it? I mean, you know, honestly, whatever, that's up to you, but I'm just not down with hacking into something that's living and being like, I'm hungry. Because again, I've not done that now for over 2 years, and I'm fantastically healthy. So, and I don't starve myself. I'm not compromising anything. So anyway, I know I'm a little bit preachy on that, but that's because I believe in it. Anyway, so here we go. Here's how bovine fetal blood is harvested. Cows are occasionally sent to slaughter because they are crippled or to simply thin a herd. If a cow is found to be pregnant during the removal of its internal organs, the uterus is quickly moved to a specialized extraction area so the fetal blood can be harvested within 30 minutes of the mother's demise. This is done by inserting a sterile vacuum collection apparatus directly into the heart. The fetus must be at least 3 months of age, or the heart is too small for puncture. A three-month fetus yields about 150 cc's of serum, while a near-term fetus, 9 months, can yield up to 550 cc's. The heart must be beating to ensure the blood remains uncoagulated and all the blood can be extracted from the fetus. Therefore, it is presumed that the fetus is alive at the time of the extraction. After the blood is removed, the remains of the fetus are processed for animal feed. Approximately 500,000 liters, or 132,000 gallons, of fetal bovine serum are sold per year, which means that at least 1 million unborn calf fetuses are subjected to brutal harvesting procedure each year. The complete details of the entire brutal procedure can be, again, found here on a link that she has on this page, which I will put in the chat room. At the very least, this disturbing information should raise huge concerns regarding animal welfare and animal cruelty, and make you question what is coming through that needle, and also what you're putting in your mouth, because that processing of that, that's all energy. We're all energy. We all eat food for energy. The steak, the hamburger, the chicken, the vegetable, the broccoli, the celery, the lettuce, the spinach, all that's all energy. And when you terrorize animals, and that's how they are raised, that's how they live, that's how they grow, that's how they're butchered, you're eating terrorized energy. I mean, it's just, you can't, that's not good for you. It creates problems on levels that I can't even explain, because I'm sure I don't know about them. But I guarantee you, it's not just simply, oh, well, my muscles get bigger, or my body feels better when I eat meat. Not the case. Not the case. You've got to look beyond that. That's a lower form of consciousness thinking, and we are moving into a higher form of consciousness where, ask yourself truly, would Jesus eat a steak? I mean, really. And that's just where I'm at with it. And not in a religious way. I don't do the religion thing. I'm not like Christian religion. But Christ was here, and the answer is no, he wouldn't eat a steak. So anyway, viral contaminants in FBS, which again is fetal bovine serum. There are four recognized species within the family of pestiviruses. Bovine viral diarrhea virus 1 and 2, classical swine fever virus, and border disease virus. And they all have abbreviations. Over the last few years, a new bovine pestivirus species has been identified called Hobie-like virus. Since 2002, all five of these strains have been detected in various cell cultures and in lots of FBS around the world. A study completed in Italy, 2015, found that all 26 batches of FBS tested were contaminated with at least one species of bovine pestivirus. The USDA claims that humans are not susceptible to BVDV when exposed to infected cattle. But can pestivirus cause infection in humans when they are injected in a vaccination? Could cow viruses be crossing species lines to cause illness? Although a clear association has not been made, BVDV antigens were found in the stool of 30 out of 128 children with infantile gastroenteritis and microcephaly. Has been reported in infants born to mothers who were seropositive for BVDV, meaning they had it. Could new viruses be forming? In 1999, the Center for Biologics Evaluations and Research held a meeting on the evolving scientific and regulatory perspectives on cell substrates for vaccine development. They met to discuss the increasing amount of viral contaminants present in the expanding vaccine schedule. Mm, that's awesome. Keep in mind, many vaccines using bovine and avian serum have been added to the subsequent 17 years since this conference. Questioning long-term safety, Dr. Martin Myers from National Vaccine Program asked, "As I sit and count the number of immunizations that various populations receive that have these contaminant particles, I wonder if there is any data or seroresponsiveness in longitudinal studies. Meaning, have we followed these children over an extended period of time to see if they have developed antibodies to viral contaminants?" And even a more appropriate question would have been, have we looked for health problems in these children to see if they've been caused by the viral contaminants in these vaccines? A response came from James S. Robertson, Ph.D., from the National Institute for Biological Standards and Control. He interrupted Dr. Myers, stating, "There is no evidence for any increase in the incidence of childhood illness since the onset of the measles and mumps vaccination program." His response was as incomplete as it was inaccurate. The more accurate statement would have been, "We have not identified any increase in childhood illness from bovine viruses or any cancer caused by avian retroviruses." Which begs the question, are researchers actually looking for an association between viruses and illness? And I know this is getting a little bit into the scientific end of it, but this is really getting you to understand that this is somebody who studies and looks at vaccines for her life. That's what she does. And she's one of the disinformation dozen because she knows everything about all this stuff. And she is very clearly explaining to us what we do not want to put in ourselves. And I'm just giving a little bit of a lengthy discussion here. And it doesn't go for much longer, but I do want to explain that this is where we're at. So, let's see. So in research, you can't find what you're not looking for. Identifying an association between viral contaminants and a long list of autoimmune, neurologic, and other illnesses would be disastrous for the vaccine program. Because no one wants to find this association, funding for this type of research is in short supply. There has been little, let's go against Big Pharma and the vaccine industry. Yeah. There has been little argument among researchers over the last 20 years that contaminant viruses from cow and avian sources have been detected in vaccines. What they do not agree upon, however, are the effects of these extra viruses may be having on humans. At the conclusion of the two-day 1999 meeting, a CDC virologist, Dr. Walid Henney, publicly cautioned the importance of not generalizing or hypothesizing that no harm can be caused by stray viruses in vaccines. He mentioned research conducted in 97 by Weismar et al. Demonstrating that viral contaminants can replicate, meaning they are capable of causing illness. Dr. Heine concluded by advising that prudence be followed. Because even though the effect of some viruses are known, other illness-causing viruses may be present and causing harm that have yet to be detected. A more recent study, 2020, reports similar findings. And again, that's a link on this article. Vaccines with fetal bovine serum. Here we go. This is what we kind of have all been waiting for. Which ones have this that we know of for sure? Knowing more about each of the ingredients in vaccines should make you think twice about what is being injected into the body of your child and into your own arm. The vaccines that use fetal bovine serum during the manufacturing process include all DTP vaccines, which diphtheria and whatever, it's DTaP, okay? So all DTaP vaccines, which the names are Infanrix, Kinrix, Pediarix, and Pentacell. Teen DTaP vaccines, Adacel and Boostrix. Tetanus boosters. You hear that? And remember when I got my, I stabbed my thumb and then they wanted me to, oh God, like nine different people begged me to get a tetanus booster? Yeah. So all the tetanus boosters, DT, no longer readily available. Hepatitis A, polio, MMR, ProQuad, which is MMR plus V. I'm not real sure what that is. Rotatec. Rabies, Japanese encephalitis, Variax, which is chickenpox, and Zostavax, which is your shingles vaccine. So all of that is just poison. It's all poison anyway, and we know that. There's also heavy metals in it, and there's a lot of times there's mercury in it. And then there's fetal cells from aborted fetuses. I mean, it just, wow, the things that we have allowed ourselves to inject into ourselves. It's unbelievable. So the next time your physician pushes you or your family to get one of these vaccines, think about the fetal bovine ingredient. One of many ingredients in vaccines. Think about the repulsive way the serum is extracted from unborn cows. Then give the information you've read here and on other substacks to your physician. Maybe he will learn a thing or two about what is coming through that needle. Oh, and then ask, now that you know this, doctor, do you want this cow stuff injected into your children? That could seriously be something that they will be forced to think about. So, I am going to drop a link to this in the chat, because this is worth going over again, folks, and it's actually worth sharing with people, because it's important. It's what we're injecting into ourselves, and it's what we think is making us better, when in reality it's actually making us sick and killing us. Now, I believed in it anyway. I didn't really, I guess I wasn't, before I was a conspiracy theorist, I never really thought too much about it, but I didn't ever like needle. And then when you think about it, if you think, well, you know, God created this whole agenda, everything in it and all of us going around it, and the earth and, you know, what we call space, whatever's up there, and everything on it, on the planet, all the plants, all the animals. And so what I'm thinking is, most disease has been invented in a lab, and that's just fact. And then a lot of it's been sprayed on us or injected into us. And then, so again, I'm going in my mind, well, if God created all this, why did man need to get so advanced in his own wisdom at a point, and then decide, oh, here's how we can stop this thing. And it requires me to create something in a lab setting. So now you've removed yourself from the common man already, and then been like, well, so now you can't do this. I have to do it. I'm specialized, and I've created this thing that will save you. And so you're saying, on some level, well, God failed here, and your immune system just simply doesn't work, and you're going to have to go through me and my corporation and my pharmaceutical company and my doctors and my education system trained doctors that will go through the pharmaceutical corporation and inject this stuff into you, because this is what will keep you healthy. So that's where we're at. That's what's going on. And yeah, it's not what I believe in, not what I think is right. And I, you know, I'm dead set against it. Now, they have been talking about having people stop eating meat. And that's a real thing. They're going to do that. And you say, well, how are they going to do that? And if you go to the CDC's own webpage, you can find where it talks about over 50 of those 60, which is far more than that now. So, but there are 50 different vaccines that currently have, oh, and I can't remember what gene that they put in there. I can't remember what it's called. But it's got a funky little name. It's like C-gel or something like that. I can't remember what it's called. But it is a it is a protein that makes you allergic to meat. It makes you violently allergic to meat. And it wouldn't really do anything to you unless it was injected into you. So, again, we just read and went over some of these different toxins and viruses. They call them viruses. A virus is just a poison. So there's all these different toxins and viruses and things floating around in the serum of the blood of a still beating heart of an infant cow that they vacuum out and then use as the liquid to then culture these other things and then inject into you. Yeah, that sounds real good. I mean, just wow. That's all I can say. So no, I'm not going to do that. And then I'm not going to eat the cow that was chopped up into pieces after that and served to me as steak and hamburger. I'm sorry. I'm just, you know, call me new fashioned, but no, I'm not doing that. And like I said, I haven't been doing that now for over 2 years. Well, coming up on 2 years, I suppose. Yeah, it's right at about 2 years. And I feel fantastic. I haven't felt better. I've never been healthier. I've never been stronger, leaner, whatever, all that. And a lot of it comes from eating shakes. I mean, I eat protein shakes where, you know, I get a lot of my nutrition, almost all of it, from either a scoop of greens, which I've hunted down and found a really quality greens supplement that I get from Ancient Nutrition. And I add that in with a scoop of casein protein, which is a slow digesting, long lasting kind of a protein. So it makes you feel full, you know, and then you add that in with a scoop of protein isolate, whey isolate, which is basically when you have concentrate protein, it's got like, say, 50 different types of proteins in it. And they all are at different lengths, literally different lengths of proteins. If you're looking at it on a microscopic scale, you got some that are real big and bulky, and then you got little tiny ones. And whey isolate protein basically runs those all through a cheesecloth, if you will, a microscopic cheesecloth, and it filters it down to the very simplest and smallest chains, the little ones, that are easily absorbable by your system. So there's very, very little work that goes on when you take a scoop of protein isolate, which is what bodybuilders do. Bodybuilders will take a scoop of protein isolate right before they work out, and then they will work out, and that protein is being sucked into their system right then, immediately, and it's being used for their workout, for the workout. And then right afterwards, they have another scoop of that, and it's, again, immediately absorbed, and it immediately goes to rebuilding the muscle. So went on a little jag about that, but you have your protein, you have a couple of different types of protein, you also have maybe some hemp protein and some pumpkin seed protein so that you can vary it and mix it up so you're not always doing the same thing. You got a scoop of greens, which has so many plant enzymes and other fiber and digestive enzymes and all these actual ground up plant matter and spirulina and chlorella and all just an amazing amount of stuff. So after you do this for a while and you start doing this for a couple, 3 months, 4 months, 5 months, 6 months, a year, 2 years, it really changes you. You really, your skin clears up, your hair gets better, your fingernails, everything, all the little issues that you might have, digestive problems go away. It's amazing how much better you feel. It's amazing how much better you sleep. And again, I would really seriously attribute a lot of it to just simply eating flesh of once living beings. Okay. And I know that, you know, a lot of people, I will agree, veganism is a religion, and I don't subscribe. I don't do religions. Okay. So I'm not saying be a vegan. Although, in the end, I think that is that's where it goes. Because why would you eat butter and sour cream and milk? I mean, truly, I don't drink milk either. I've found a way. You can go to Almond Cow is the name of the company, and they have a milk producer, right? They you can milk nuts, and so cashews, almonds, and coconut. That's what I mix together, and it comes in. It's a little metal basket that has mesh all built into it. And you fill it up with your cashews and your almonds and your coconut, and you add this thing and you put it in the filtered water that you've dumped into your holder for it. It's like a big coffee percolator looking thing. You hit the button and it grinds up the nuts and it sits them in that water, and you create milk, and it is the best milk I've ever had. And you can hit the button again and it does another 3 rounds through it, and that will give you a little bit thicker, more, I don't know what you would say, just a little bit thicker milk. Then you take that basket off once you've ready to pour out your milk into your jar, and the paste that you get from the nut coconut is fantastic. There's like 30 different recipes that you can make with it, and they all you can get them on that website, and you can just look it up. I personally just eat it with a spoon because it's good fiber. It tastes good. It tastes kind of like coconut, and it's just basically mashed up cashews and almonds with coconut. Honestly, it would be good baby food too. Anyway, so, you know, there's just really not that much reason for us to be harvesting animals, using animals, having animals, and loving animals and caring for animals, yeah. And again, I'm not against, like, if you milk the cows and if you're doing it in a humane way and everything else, then yeah, you can make that milk into sour cream and butter and yogurt and whatever. And that's fine. But I just think as human beings, as we evolve consciously, then things change. And when things change, right? So that means we have to change our diet when our mind starts working more appropriately. When we stop being like Jordan Maxwell was talking about, when we stop being absolutely brainwashed and like cattle standing out in the field, milling around, gnawing on our cud, looking for food and taking care of our kids. And when we're done just doing that and just kind of staring at the ground and waiting for the clob to come in, blast us in the head, okay, then we can start going, oh, wait a minute here. This is I'm connected to everything. I'm connected to all these people. And I'm connected to all these animals, and I'm connected to all of these plants in different ways and in different amounts. But nonetheless, we are all connected to everything. And all of this is energy and vibration and frequency. Just like Tesla said, if you want to know the secrets of the universe, then consider frequency, energy, and vibration. And when we start to study non-physical phenomenon, we will have more progress in 1 year than science has had in the previous 100 years. Because we seem to look at matter and its effect and its relationship to energy and how that works. And what we seem to not have been able to figure out is kind of going the other way from, you know, we can kind of grasp the energy to matter thing. And so we need to figure out matter to energy. And that's an area of science that, you know, again, they've clearly been working on this. They have it in underground bases. They have it in, different places where, you know, you hear stories of different military people saying, oh, the stuff, I can't talk about it, you know, and they'll hint at stuff that's what they call anti-gravity, which, again, that's just gravity is just a bullshit term. There's no such thing as gravity. There is and, you know, I've actually even watched different science channels, I suppose, just different groups of scientists kind of sitting around together and chumming, but saying that there is no real what did he say? What was the word he used? Pre-tendency or tendency for things to go down the natural downward tendency, I guess is what they were calling it, instead of gravity. So, and so he was saying there is no natural downward tendency. You know, we see that just because things go up and then they fall down and they come down. And then, so if that was the case and they had a helium balloon and they were expanding the balloon out, okay? So the gas was going into the balloon, and the balloon was expanding like a balloon does, meaning that all molecules of gas are going in all directions at the same time. Now, the one argument that was being made was that when you put the helium balloon that goes up and floats in a vacuum, then the helium balloon will sink. Okay, it will no longer float up, it will settle down. Now, the people that were arguing, okay, see, so there is your natural tendency for downward movement. The argument, the real understanding is that no, see, the gas within the balloon has not gone down. The balloon is still expanded in every direction as it was when it was floating in the atmosphere. So the atmosphere has changed. Yeah, the atmospheric conditions have changed to a vacuum. And so now the helium no longer behaves the same in regards to what we would see and or think of then now as a natural tendency for downward. But if that was the case and it was now in a vacuum, and so that we were now being shown that everything now has a natural tendency for downward, the gas would pool up down lower in the balloon, in the rubber stretchy balloon, and it would kind of make a pancake looking thing. But it does not. It stays fully inflated, the balloon does, with the helium in it going in all directions, and the balloon itself falls to the ground. staying the same shape. So, and again, I mean, what does that prove? Well, I mean, it just proves that we don't really know that much about things. And when you really get into the science of it, there's a lot of things that break down. Oh, it's just gravity. And I mean, you can pick up a feather and a penny and an apple and watch an airplane fall out of the sky, and you throw them all and they all come right back down. And you go, say, see, it all wants to go down. There's clearly gravity. If I go to a cliff, I'll fall off. If I throw this pencil up, it comes back down. Clearly there's gravity. And clearly, no, that's not true. That's what we've been taught, and that's what we think. And that's so, again, it's like what Jordan Maxwell just said. It's us going along with the herd. And guess who runs our education system? Guess who bought and paid for and made sure of what we would know was the Rockefellers. And I can promise you that they were not like, ooh, let's make a bunch of smart people. Let's have a real smart society. Let's create a bunch of citizens that think freely and can critically think and are self-determined. No, no. That's what has come because spirit has finally been held back for so long that we're finally now breaking out. We're finally now breaking out, and people internally, intrinsically, and we've probably done this ride so many times, and what I'm hinting at there is reincarnation. We've done this ride several times, and we're now going, okay, let's be done. I'm done with this shit. And a lot of people feel that way. I know you do, because I do, and I know I'm not alone. And so this will be a good thing. We can break free of all of these different mindless types of behavior and mindless thinking and bring ourselves to a higher level of consciousness, which starts one little bit at a time. You start eating differently. Your mind starts working better. You start drinking filtered water. Your mind starts working better. You start talking to God on your own terms, in your own way, from your own self. Your mind starts working better. You start getting in shape and working out and feeling better. And your mind starts working better. And then you realize that the universe is mental. All of this is in the mind. And if we just can get a grip on our mind, we can then have literally mind over matter. And we can create heaven. And that is what we are to do. That is why Christ came here. He put that in the Akashic records to show us that it can be done and tell us how to do it. And now it is up to us to do it. It really is up to us to do it. I believe Jesus has come and gone, folks. He has come and gone. I love Jesus. I love what he did. I love what he stood for. And I do believe he did some of the greatest work that could possibly ever be done. But it has been done. So take care, guys. Thank you for joining me on this fantastic edition of the Jonathan Wright Show, and I hope you learned something, and I hope you gained something, and I hope you take this with you and have a great rest of your weekend. We'll see.
transcending time and space. Let us take you to the place inside your mind where thoughts divide and mysteries unwind. Join us every Monday evening right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. And you will catch the Fenton Perspective with our great host, Lorian Fenton. Come listen in as she shares her amazing stories from the past to present, along with all of her guest secrets to the future. That's the Fenton Perspective every Monday evening right here from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, only on Revolution Radio.